Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Well, here we are at another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. My name is Kyle Borg, and I am hailing from Winchester, Kansas. But I am only one third of the trio that makes up Three Guys Theologizing. I am joined today by my good friend and future district attorney of whatever county, Grant County. Why do I always think Clay County? Grant County. What a boring name. Like, is that named after Ulysses S. Grant?
I have no idea.
You don't know.
You would think I would know, but I don't know.
You are a representative now of your county. You are the district attorney of Grant County. I would think that you would know answers to this.
Two things, just by way of clarification. One, January 1st is when I take office. So I'm okay. Second, I'm not going to be the district attorney. It's the prosecuting attorney. Now, it's different in different states, but in Indiana, it's the prosecuting attorney.
First of all, Indiana gives me PTSD, so you can't
understand
not having that totally right. But I should say, let's rewind to my main point. And my main point is you really should know the history of your county, regardless of whether you're prosecuting attorney, district attorney, so on and so forth.
All right. Point taken. Yes.
But I have not actually introduced the future prosecuting attorney of Grant County. I am joined by one of the other one third of 3GT, Scott Hunt. And sadly today. Sadly, we don't have Barry. We fired him. No, we didn't. Barry was unable to make it today. Busy schedules for all of us. Sometimes it's hard to get all of us around the table. But I am glad to be able to do two guys theologizing today with Scott. And I think we've got a good, fun episode lined up for us and for our listeners. So here's how I want to introduce the topic. Some of you listeners might know, because I've referenced him in the past, but one of my favorite theologians is a Dutch theologian by the name of Herman Witsius. Witsius is renowned for a number of his major works. He wrote a great volume on the Lord's Prayer, wrote two volumes on the Apostles' Creed, and maybe his magnum opus is The Economy of the Covenants Between God and Man, which is, for any of you book nerds, theology nerds out there, it really is like the standard textbook for Reformed covenant theology. But those are not the only volumes that Witsius wrote, and Witsius wrote a fascinating volume that, to my knowledge, is not currently in print, and I think somebody would do the church a great favor by putting it in print, but it is a volume entitled Irenical Animadversions. Now, those are two very big, very confusing words, but essentially, in fact, we should name this podcast Irenical Animadversions. I'll tell Barry that. But what the title really means is a peaceful criticism, a peaceful criticism. Witsius was invited by the British Isle into a theological debate that was going on in his day in the 17th century, namely a debate between the Neonomians and the Antinomians. And I'm not going to get into all the details of that because that's neither here nor there. But Witsius, who was renowned for his ability to be a peaceful critic, was brought in by both sides of the conflict to read their works, to read their tracts, to weigh them, and to give a biblical answer. And what is phenomenal about this volume is not only the theology as it weaves itself between Neonomianism and Antinomianism, but I think one of the things that I've appreciated the most since I first read this volume, and I'm rereading it right now, is the spirit with which Witsius addresses controversies in the church. In particular, let me just read by way of introduction a couple of sentences that are included in the introduction to this book. Witsius wrote, "I have often thought with myself, perhaps those men were the most happy who, knowing nothing but Jesus Christ and Him crucified, and living soberly, righteously, and godly according to the prescription of the gospel, did not so much as hear by report concerning the contentions and arguments of divines. And I reckon it not the smallest part of our calamity or at least the most painful of our office, that we who preside in matters of Christianity are often constrained to bestow tedious labor in resolving the difficulties of thorny controversies. And with that spirit, Witsius addresses this significant controversy, not as one who is jumping at the bit to engage in it, but one who understood that there are times when that is what we as Christians need to do. Sometimes we need to engage in controversy. So I use that as an introduction today, a prolonged introduction, but we'll get to it, because our episode is going to be on controversy, on disagreements. In the Church of Jesus Christ, if you are a member, you have probably experienced in some degree, some capacity, a controversy or a disagreement. Sometimes that can be doctrinal. Sometimes it can be more relational. But the Church of Jesus and we as Christians are not immune to these things. And so I want to talk a little bit just about some of the practicalities of controversy and disagreements. And the first thing I want to start with, and this is where we'll bring Scott in to shed all of his wisdom. Scott, of course, is an attorney. And I think that's why this is going to be especially interesting. Scott is in a business where he has to enter into disagreements and controversies. And I think much of what he probably has to say to his vocation would be true as well within the church. So let's start this episode by first just talking about the necessity of controversy and disagreements. I think all of us in an ideal world would rather have nothing to do with controversies and disagreements. But Scott, what do you think? Why sometimes, even in the church, are controversies, are disagreements, why are they sometimes necessary?
Well, you know, Paul even says there are divisions among you and it's necessary. So this isn't something that I'm making up on my own or you're making up on your own. The Bible clearly says that there is division and it's necessary. It's necessary, first of all, for our sanctification. Oftentimes, as the Proverbs say, you know, with respect to a judge, you know, one side seems right, and then another comes along and gives his side of the story. So I think controversy and disagreement, conflict, as it were, is necessary for our shaping, our training, our sanctification, as I said, because oftentimes we don't see the entire side or the entire scope of what's going on from our perspective. And it helps to have another perspective. And sometimes it's hard, and sometimes you have to be confronted with the fallacies and the holes in your perspective, and we all have them. So it's necessary and it's helpful. And you know, it is awfully hard, but it's helpful to us to expose our blind spots, to show holes in our arguments. And really, at the end of the day, it should, a good controversy, a good disagreement should strengthen both parties. And your relationship at the end of that disagreement should be closer than at the beginning. If you're handling things biblically, that's the way, that's the outcome that will take place. And it's not easy, but it's necessary. And it's throughout the Bible. There's controversy throughout the Bible. You know, I was thinking about Moses and his father-in-law, Jethro. You know, what advice did Jethro give Moses? But, you know, basically, appoint other judges. You cannot spend all day dealing with controversy. So here we have these Israelites just brought out of Egypt in the wilderness, and they are already bickering. And there's controversy, there's issues. And Moses is being overwhelmed by these. So it's not something new or something phenomenal about our experience in the 21st century. It's something that's been going on for the entire history of Christianity in the world. And it's something, if we learn to do it right and to do it well, it's not about winning, it's about growing. And so that's why I think it's important.
Put that on a bumper sticker. It's not about winning, it's about growing. I like that. Is that going to be your campaign slogan the next time you run for prosecutor?
Absolutely not.
Okay,
absolutely
good.
Not.
Good. So, no, Scott, I like so much of what you're saying there, you know, all the way from my own deficiencies and insufficiencies. We all have blind spots. We all have things that we hold to that we think are right, but we have to admit that we have blind spots. And sometimes those blind spots are exposed by means of controversy. I think you quoted, you didn't specify it, but Proverbs 18, right? There are often differing views on different things, on whether it's situations, whether it's doctrinal points, and Proverbs 18 acknowledges that sometimes there are these disagreements. I loved you pointing out 1 Corinthians 11, which is where Paul says, look, there are divisions among you, and there have to be. Because those divisions, those types of disagreements sometimes actually reveal who are the children of God and who are not. I think, you know, one of the things I might add is, you know, you started touching upon it when you said, you know, these things are necessary for our sanctification. And I want to dig into that a little bit, because I think that's really helpful. You know, I know very few people, at least, who would say, now I think some people's behavior betrays themselves, but I know very few people who would say, you know, I really like disagreement. Oftentimes, and this is true of pastors and elders I know, this is true of men on my session, none of us like controversy. None of us like disagreements. We're all a little sheepish, you know, when we need to go confront somebody and we know it's going to lead to a disagreement. Nobody likes it. But Scott, you said it's necessary for our sanctification. And what I want to think about just for a moment is, you know, I really appreciate that. We can often think that being sanctified, being more like Christ, means that we might move away from some of these things. And we're going to talk about moving away from sinful responses and sinful kinds of disagreements. But there is a kind of controversy and disagreement that is not unlikeness to Christ. It is actually likeness to Christ. You know, you think about the Old Testament. You think especially about the prophets and the way in which God literally tells his people, I have a controversy with you. I remember somebody once picturing the Old Testament prophets, and you'll resonate with this, they're prosecuting attorneys. They are coming to prosecute a case on God's behalf. God literally telling his people, I've got a controversy with you. I've got a disagreement with you, and here's what I'm going to charge you with. You know, God takes up controversies. And so when we do that in a right way, in a sanctified way, we are actually being more like God. You know, if you're the kind of person who so avoids controversies and disagreements at all costs, at all times, and in all places, it's not because you're Christ-like. Actually, at the end of the day, is because you're not much like Christ in that area. And so I really like that you tied that to sanctification. I'd also add just real quick, you know, I think Acts 15 and into the first part of 16 are really helpful to just demonstrate that, guess what? Disputes exist in the church. You mentioned divisions from 1 Corinthians 11. Paul in 1 Corinthians 11 says, you know, these divisions exist to see who's truly a Christian, who is not. But there are also just genuine disputes that Christians have. You know, Acts 15 is taken up with the dispute, the controversy on circumcision. And there's confusion there. Is circumcision required? Is it not? They go to the scriptures, and together they are able to discern the mind of the Spirit through the word as to an answer to that dispute. But what has always struck me is right after the Jerusalem Council, at the end of Acts 15, is the dispute between Paul and Barnabas. Mm-hmm. And I think, I know commentators argue about it, but you know, the historian there, Luke, does not indicate who's right and who's wrong in that dispute.
Right.
It's there's a hot contention, and Paul and Barnabas go their separate ways. And then Acts 16 begins with a new kind of dispute. And that is that Paul is taking Timothy with him, and he knows, you know what, if Timothy's not circumcised, that's going to cause some controversy. That's going to cause some disagreements. So I'm going to have him circumcised so that he's not an offense to the Jews. And we see right there in the middle of Acts, this wonderful reality. Now, maybe wonderful is too strong a word, but this reality that there are disputes in the church for different reasons.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're doctrinal. Sometimes they are driven by personalities, preferences, opinions. Sometimes they're just driven by practice. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think this demonstrates that controversy and disagreements are sometimes necessary.
Yeah. And, you know, I like when you talk about sanctification, it's not just personal sanctification, although it is that. If you look at the history of the church and the growth of the church, where would we be doctrinally if we did not have disputes and arguments? If Athanasius didn't take up the stand that he took, or, you know, if Luther didn't in the 16th century, you know, where would we be as a church? So oftentimes it's these hard conflicts that bring about a precision in doctrine and a precision in congregational life that is so necessary that would not happen if people did not have these contentious views and didn't man up and take care of them face to face, you know? And that's what you can see throughout the history of the church, that the Lord has used very difficult circumstances and contentious situations to bring about the holiness of the body of Christ. You see that in the issue with circumcision in Acts 15. There was a development, a growth in the church because of this contentious idea. And even Acts 16, I like the fact that you point out that, you know, Luke doesn't say who was right between Paul and Barnabas. And I think it's wrong for us to say which one was right and which one was wrong. And you know what? In life, sometimes there are those things. There might be a disagreement you and I have, and truth be told, neither one of us are right, neither one of us are wrong. We just see things differently.
If you're talking you and me personally, I think the answer is readily available. I'm
sure.
Sorry, I interrupted your salient point. Keep going.
But that's and I think we might get to this, but I think that's another thing that we need to bear in mind as we look at how to properly handle conflict, is that sometimes we're both wrong or we're both right, and you just have to go your separate ways.
Yeah. No, I like that. And, you know, we talk a lot about, at least as Presbyterians, we talk a lot about the peace, the purity, and the progress of the church. And sometimes, as history shows itself, both biblical history and post-biblical history in the history of the church, right, that peace, purity, and progress is purchased through significant controversies and disagreements. You can't deny that. And we can be hesitant. It almost seems paradoxical in our minds that peace is going to come about by disagreement. But that is often how it plays out. And I think that's true. I mean, just to bring in your profession, that's very true of your profession. It's why we have attorneys, you know, because you recognize that progress in a situation sometimes requires there to be a true controversy and disagreement that you deal with in an equitable way, hearing both sides. So
absolutely. And you know, that's what I've said this numerous times to defense attorneys. That's why we have jury trials. You and I see things differently. You know what? Let's have somebody come in and listen to the evidence and make a determination. I'm not angry at you. I don't agree with the way you're looking at things. You don't agree with the way I'm looking at things. Well, guess what? Let's have somebody else come in and hear it. Yep. And it's fine. And if I lose, I lose. If I win, I win. But it's not, you know, that's not a bad thing. It's a merciful thing. And you know, that's why I referred back to Moses in Deuteronomy. Exodus. It's a merciful thing to have people make decisions, to hear both sides of the story and make a decision.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to follow up on that in a little bit on a different point, but
sure.
I really appreciate that. We'll circle back around to it. So controversies, disagreements are sometimes necessary, as much as many of us don't like it. But let's shift the conversation a little bit. You know, the scriptures speak quite frankly and strongly against being argumentative, against a quarrelsome spirit, against divisiveness, things like that. You know, I think a lot of people can read those on a very superficial and surface level, and that's where they tend to recoil. Like, oh, I'm not, you know, any kind of disagreement or controversy is automatically that. It's automatically argumentative, or this sinful quarreling, or this divisiveness. What do you think? What is the difference between those things and a needed, sanctified controversy and disagreement?
So I think it goes to the motives of the heart. And that's hard to judge, right? I mean, man does not know another man's heart. But if you're looking introspectively at yourself, what are your motives for engaging in this disagreement? Is it to just simply to show the other guy that they're wrong and prove that you're right? Well, that's kind of argumentative. Is it for their good? Hey, I'm concerned about you. Let's discuss this. And are you open? You know, when you go into a controversy or a disagreement about anything, you have to be open to listening to criticism as well, and recognize that you may not understand everything, but let's flesh this out and see where we stand. So, why you're doing what you're doing, I think, is probably the most important difference between being argumentative and you know, rightly pursuing holiness and justice. And sometimes it is fun to argue. You know, I will confess that sometimes I just like to argue with defense attorneys in my profession. And that's not always right. It's not right. But when you're arguing to seek the truth and open to hearing issues that you may have, I think that that separates argumentative from pursuing truth and peace. Because ultimately what you're looking for is a resolution that is just and equitable. So even through this conflict, that's your pursuit is peace, not winning. And that's why I say, that's why I said what I did. So what's the purpose of your arguing? Are you just trying to prove a point? Well, then that's wrong. Stop. Or are you pursuing peace? Pursue.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think I really like that. And I think helps us, you know, if verses like that, that speak against being argumentative, quarrelsome, you know, if those at face value are just universally applied without careful thinking, then God, like we've said, God himself would be guilty of that because mm-hmm. God tells his people, I have a controversy with you. And so I like that qualification. You know, I think too, so 2 Timothy 2:24, of course, Paul is writing in the context of writing to a young pastor, but he says, you know, the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome. Mm-hmm. And then he adds, but, right, which is a conjunction that is going to contrast. So when I say you're not to be quarrelsome, but this is what you are to be, we begin to get a picture, I think, from Paul, what the opposite of quarrelsome is. And Paul says the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, mm-hmm. correcting his opponents with gentleness. God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth, and they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will. You see so much in this, right? Paul is saying, what's the opposite of quarrelsome? It's when you're unkind, right? Kindness, biblically speaking, is it's a proactive, I am showing good, I'm doing good to someone else. There's a way to actually disagree with somebody, enter into a quarrel. Paul styles them actually your opponents mm-hmm. and still be seeking to do them good. You know, you're not to be quarrelsome. You should be able to teach. You know, you should be patient and even patiently enduring evil from those that you may have a controversy with. You should correct with gentleness, right? Biblically speaking, gentleness is the restraint of strength. And then, as you were saying, right, the motive, the end matters. Paul says that God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth. So that's the aim. That's the ambition. When I have to take up a disagreement and a controversy, it's not self-vindication. It's not to score points. It is, I want God to work in this in a way that magnifies his grace and his glory. So I think that's really, really important. You know, I also think the Bible speaks against, right, arguing about stupid things. Paul warns Timothy, you know, stop, don't enter those disputes about words. There's no profit to that. And I do think we as Christians need to think very carefully through what is profitable arguing. You know, in reform circles, especially the social media wagers, what can I call them? The social media warriors, if I can phrase it that way.
Keyboard warriors is what I've heard it referred to.
Keyboard warriors, I like that. You know, the keyboard warriors are notorious for quoting Calvin. Calvin once said, you know, when a master is kicked, the dog has to bark. And these people act like now they have a divine mandate that every time they find something displeasing, they're going to start barking. And I think people like that, just an encouragement, they really need to think through the profitability of their controversies, how they do it, how they go about it, what they decide to disagree and argue with people on. But I think that matters. You know, the other thing that I would say matters, and I say this as a Presbyterian and as a very happy Presbyterian, you know, I think churches should have a process by which to deal with disagreements, and people should utilize that process. I have a good friend that always tells me, you know, Presbyterianism exists by the will of Jesus because controversy exists in the church. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not every church has those processes and policies in place. But that's, to me, that is one of the major distinctions about you know, we're warned against divisive people. Divisive people, in one sense, are those who take matters into their own hands. We're going to do everything simply on our preference, on the way that I want to do it, regardless of how anybody else. And one of the things that I love about Presbyterianism, it does have safeguards. It has policies and procedures for how controversies and disagreements can be heard, you know, analogous to our court system. Mm-hmm. Just as you were explaining, the court system of the United States has like very nuanced policies and procedures by which to deal with controversy. And that's something that is so important and distinguishes, mm-hmm. I think, a godly way of dealing with controversy versus an ungodly way of dealing with it.
Yeah. And I, you know, I really appreciate what you're saying. And I think there's a fear and you know, the Bible does speak, you know, settle with your adversary on the way to court, lest, you know, you put this in front of a judge. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And Paul also criticizes the church suing each other, or, you know, taking their matters before the civil court. So I'm not advocating everything needs to be that. And I don't think you are either. And even in the church, you know, what is so important is to have an avenue for these cases and controversies. That's what the Constitution calls them. These cases and controversies to be addressed and to be dealt with fairly. And as you said, you know, when people refuse to do that, to me, that's showing that's almost the argumentative type of person. That Paul speaks against. You're refusing to go and have it mediated by an elder or by some other, you know,
in your case, a jury in the trial room or a judge, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's if all you want to do is argue about it and not let somebody else decide or not let somebody else hear it, you're the one being argumentative. Yeah. And until you are able and willing to say, listen, I will put myself up to the scrutiny of a jury, to the scrutiny of a session, to the scrutiny of the presbytery, for the sake of peace, I'm willing to do that. Then we become very argumentative if we avoid that.
Yeah,
does that make sense to you?
Oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. I mean, perfect sense, right? Especially in a Presbyterian context where we, outside of the context of controversy, have agreed on these policies and procedures, right? Like these aren't made up in the heat of the moment. We like, so in the RPCNA, right, we have a book of discipline that walks through these things. You know, as a citizen in the United States, I guess I'm kind of implicitly brought under the jurisdiction of the courts. Mm-hmm. And if I have these matters, you know, I'm bound in it by my citizenship, I'm bound to these policies and procedures. And I think they are there to be utilized. They are there, you know, because of, even in America, I think it falls back on certain principles of equity and justice that are often, not always, but often found in the scriptures. You know, mm-hmm. people have a right to air their side. Proverbs 18, you know, let each be heard. And I think when you kick that orderliness to the curb, I think you're right. You're the one being argumentative, quarrelsome, and divisive. So,
and you know, there is this criticism that America is so litigious, and I get that. And that goes back to not everything needs to be not everything needs to be hammered out like this. I mean, really consider what you're arguing about and what end you're looking for. If you're mad at somebody for picking the wrong color carpet for church, you know, just that's silly.
Whoa, you just hit close to home. You have no idea how close to home you just hit. We just picked new carpet in July.
A couple months before. But I use that as an example because there was another church in Marion, not an RP church. I don't even know what church it was, but I've heard the story that it split over the color of, I think, the paint in the church.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you know, if there are, you know, sins that need to be confronted, that's something completely different. And you're not being litigious to use the book of discipline or the court system in those kind of cases.
Yep. Nope. I agree. So I think you're getting on the third head that I wanted to talk about, and we're coming up against the clock, but you know, so we talked about the necessity of it, kind of some of the differences between a godly way of facing controversy versus an ungodly way. You know, what advice might you give just concern? You've kind of started there. You know, you need to consider issues and are they worth fighting over? Are they worth a controversy? You know, I think of what Peter says in 1 Peter 4, that love covers a multitude of sins, that as Christians, we do have Christian liberty if we want to not always engage in every controversy and argument and to not let everything get that way. What are some other things that you would maybe concerning controversy, disagreements in the church, doctrinal, personal, whatever it is, what are other things that you would say?
So I guess I'll just speak from professional experience here. Never make it personal. And what I mean by, you know, if there's personal sins and things that you're dealing with, that has to be dealt with, right? But if, and I'm thinking of Paul and Barnabas and their controversy they had over Mark, you know, don't make it personal. Don't be so convinced of your own rightness that you break relationship unnecessarily. And incidentally, we do read later on that Paul and Barnabas do, I guess, have a friendly relationship after years. But the one thing I've learned is I don't take what is said in an argument in a court case personally. And I'll give you a quick example. I had a hearing on Monday, and it got heated. The defense attorney on the other side, like, I object. The state shouldn't be able to do this. And I responded with, Judge, I have always done this. I'm doing this now, and I'm going to continue to do it. And so we had a disagreement. And afterward, he came over. He's like, man, I felt like I was being a jerk. I said, listen, you were doing your job. I understand. You're not offending me. You did what you had to do. And sometimes we just need to let the water roll off our back, you know, and especially in not so great controversies. And I'm not talking about, you know, heretical situations, but you know, just minor controversies between people. You have to learn to let things roll off your back.
You also, the reverse is true, especially as we engage Christians. Don't make it personal. Don't take it or make it personal.
Yeah, don't make it. And that's kind of the flip side of the coin. Don't make it personal. Just stick to what the issue is and stay there. And I think particularly, I've learned this in marriage, and I think this can be applied to marriage too, because there's times husband and wives disagree, but it's not about it. It's, you know, Allison and I have talked, you know, when we stop thinking about winning our point and start thinking about what the resolution is, it changes the dynamic of the disagreement. And, you know, when you start making it personal, you're just trying to win. And again, that goes to the motive of the heart. So that's just some of the things. And I think you really, before you engage, especially keyboard warriors, before you engage in a online controversy, stop and pray. Think about
your... Now, can we almost admit that no controversy online and no argumentation online is actually very godly? Are we really?
And you know, I have not been on social media until recently, right? I mean, other Instagram, but that doesn't really count. That's just pictures. But part of the reason is it's just so easy to engage in banal and fruitless argumentation, because you're not going to win. You don't even have a relationship with these people. That doesn't mean we should let things go unchecked, but it does mean, you know, really check your motives.
Yeah, I think motives and you know, I know a lot of people get worked up into some of today's circles, you know, about, oh, the tone police. And without, you know, trying to police tone, but how you go about it does matter. Paul says you've got to correct your opponents with gentleness, you know, and is that the single paradigm by which, no, not always, you know, but you do have to really check your heart. You know, I think if I'm ever engaged in controversies, or if I ever get pulled into them, you know, as a pastor, you have to go confront them and things like that. You know, checking the heart and watching the heart is so important, because I usually just consider any of my knee-jerk reaction responses are probably sinful. I appreciate that checking motivations.
Yeah. And you know, I'm sure it's kind of worldly, but how you say something is just as important as what you say. And I have oftentimes had to go back and apologize to people, not because of what I said, but how it came across or how I said it. You know, I still stand firm on my position. I shouldn't have said it that way. Yep. And I'm sorry.
Yep. That's not tone policing, right? There is a way that as Christians, we can check how we say things and just recognize, welcome to the world, we can offer offense in the way that we say things. So, yeah. You know, I think another thing, and we're really running up against the clock. We got 3 minutes and 52 seconds left before this meeting expires. But, you know, I think to just always be very cautious, you know, in a sense, always second guess. Again, to kind of bring us back to where we began, you know, Herman Witsius, in dealing with a very real, very trying controversy, you know, he regarded it as the most painful part of the pastoral office to have to jump in and to do that. He called it, in that quote that I read, he called it a tedious labor. And if you don't understand controversy and disagreements to be that, I don't think you're actually looking at them in a biblical way. They are tedious. They are the most, you know, as a pastor, they're the most painful thing when you've got to go and confront someone and you know it's going to lead to disagreements, or even when you have to go mediate in disagreements. It's awful. And so, you know, there should be a sanctified hesitancy, not an avoidance, right? Passivity is not biblical, but there should be a hesitancy, a care and a caution into jumping into these things. And then I think to just go back, you know, Witsius also says in his introduction, he just says, in my apprehension, it was never better with Christian people than when sincerely attentive to believe the gospel, to live in a holy manner, and to banish far the controversies of the faith, they delighted themselves in the pure love of God and Christ and in certain expectation of eternal life. Mm-hmm. Slight paraphrase, but I, you know, that's, there's a joy in the simple, plain love to Christ, love to neighbor, even when controversies are necessary. So, well, that brings us to the end of today's episode. There are some thoughts on a peaceful criticism. I am going to tell Barry that this episode needs to be named Irenical Animadversions, and there's a fun expression. I find animadversions to be one of the strangest words to try to pronounce in a very smooth way. It's awful. I trip over myself. But I want to thank you for tuning in to 3GT. Go ahead and visit us online at 3GT.xyz. We are looking forward to being able to sit down with Barry. We want to thank you for tuning in and continuing with us. We'll see you later.